Welcome to EB5 Investment Voice, where attorney insights intersects with immigration investments. If you are a foreign investor, domestic fund manager, or enterprising entrepreneur and want to get the most out of the EB5 program, you have come to the right place. I'm Mark Deal, and I'll be your co-host on this journey. I'm joined by your host, Mona Shaw, and other attorneys at Mona Shaw & Associates, as well as immigration leaders from around the world. So let's get into EB5 Investment Voice.
Rebecca, Mark, now that the dust has settled on what has been nothing short of a tumultuous election cycle, I really think the next question that everybody will ask is, will this administration favor immigration and EB5?
People have many questions, but I bet that's the primary one on the mind of listeners of this show.
Remember in the beginning of 2016, when the Trump administration came in, we did the same. We analyzed and thought Trump coming in would be good for EB5, didn't we?
Yeah, I remember that.
We did. And we did think that the signs were that EB5 would prosper under Trump because he was a real estate mogul hailing from New York City, the real estate capital of the world. He understood EB5. He used EB5.
Yes.
And Jared Kushner used EB5. They liked investors. And you would have thought that we would have seen more of a push. But unfortunately, what we didn't think about was the fact that he was not a president for immigration,
to say the least.
No, and I think that's what led to USCIS, unfortunately, seeing longer adjudication times, and we saw even a stricter scrutiny under this administration for immigration cases.
And then there was still that juxtaposition of immigration and EB5 not being allowed out of that little cage that it seems to somehow get itself boxed into and not being seen as a stimulus in itself, which we are hopeful that we may see in this election cycle.
Hopeful indeed. And I know about 4 years ago, we did a similar episode talking about what we can expect coming up. We're going to do the same this time?
Well, today's podcast is, well, we like to term it as our election special, the analysis of what's going to happen.
Well, we were all excited when we heard the news that Joseph Biden has now become president, or well, the president-elect, I should say.
Make the right distinction.
I don't know about you, Mona, but here in the UK, they were jumping up and down and fireworks were going off even here in the UK.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
Georgia has had its own celebrations as well, and pretty diverse ones at that.
New York City had erupted. But I think also what really excites me is the first female vice president and what that actually means. And really, does it make any difference looking at the long-term analysis for the immigration? Everybody knows that Kamala Harris has Indian heritage as well as Caribbean heritage. My point of view is that I think it would encourage people from overseas to think that, wow, just anybody can come to the U.S. and make it.
It's the American dream.
Yeah, and that's, you know, what the U.S. is all about. It's a melting pot, and it's nice to see not only someone with this background as a woman and being colored being up there. It's just given us so much hope for the future.
Hope for the future, especially in the special time of 2020, deserves a special episode.
Like you said, it's a special podcast, and we're going to hear from four different speakers, two from the U.S. and two from abroad.
Yes, we thought we would give our viewers a little bit of a treat today. So what we decided was that, yes, we of course need a little update on the Hill and what's happening politically. And of course, we have Aaron Grau from IIUSA who would give us that.
Mm-hmm. Yes. And then after that, we have Sam Udani, who is giving us a bit about the implications of EB5 and what's going on in the market. In addition to Mona,
he has interesting viewpoints at times, right?
Yes. And I thought one of those points came out when he mentioned the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, when he mentioned that we're going to see a change this new administration.
That's quite a prediction.
Yes, because traditionally under the Republicans, the SEC tends to be a little bit more relaxed. The kind of SEC enforcement that we saw 4 years ago was also as a result of the fact that EB5 was at its peak of popularity.
Yes, we just saw in the news as well, just as we're speaking now, that the chairman that Trump had put into the SEC, he's actually stepping down at the end of this year.
I don't know whether that's bodes good or not, but they had relaxed the definition of, of
accredited investor.
Investor, that's right.
Well, let's not give too much away. Who else we have coming up?
We also have a viewpoint from Canada and the UK. So what was your favorite?
Ooh, that's a hard one. Rebecca, I'm going to let you go first.
The one that was most mind-blowing, I think, for me, and the most intriguing interview that we did was actually from Chris Galloway from the UK. Not only was he so positive with the new administration coming in to the US, what surprised me is that he mentioned the UK as now a stepping stone to the US.
Mm-hmm. That was a surprise.
Yes, instead of a destination country. And I thought that was very interesting, and we look forward to hearing more from him.
Definitely.
Right, because most of the time immigrants come, their destination is the UK, Canada, mm-hmm. and the US. And according to Chris, you know, the UK is not that attractive anymore, maybe because it's smaller. I will always feel that there's people, of course, I'm biased. There's always people who want to come and reside in the UK. But I think we got that also from Patrick McCarthy from Canada, that Canada is definitely very competitive to the US.
Oh, yes. And he did mention, he gave a number, I think it's going up 60 or 70% of the immigrants coming in to Canada from the investor programs.
Right. Patrick indicated 60 to 70% over the last 5 years. I wonder who have you had for the last four?
Right. And for people who do want to immigrate right now, a lot of the programs around the world are not open. We just heard recently that the Cypriot program had closed.
Yes. And then there's changes to the Maltese program. I think for the new year, we're going to see a lot of changes. And unfortunately, a lot has to do with COVID, or for the UK, Brexit. All these changes are happening.
But I do think that countries are seeing programs like EB-5, for example, can be used as an economic stimulus. So I do expect that they will come back.
You're probably right, Mona. There may be some changes and some comebacks on the international stage. But I'm going to turn our attention here domestically inside the United States by welcoming our first guest to this special episode, Aaron Growl of IIUSA. Aaron, welcome back yet again to EB-5 Investment Voice.
Thank you so much. I appreciate being with you guys again. Hope you've been well.
Thank you, Aaron. Well, you are our go-to person when we want to know anything about what it really means. A lot of people have ideas and they've read Politico, etc. But you really have your ears on the hill.
You flatter. It's not just me. I mean, we've got a crack team of lobbyists, and they do spend a lot of shoe leather up on Capitol Hill. So I like to think that we have our pulse on what's happening there and what we think will happen.
Well, no, it's important for our listeners to really hear, other than speculation, as to actually what is going on there. First of all, let me get your thoughts. How do you feel that the new administration is going to make a difference, or will it make a difference moving forward for EB-5?
I do. I'm very optimistic about it. I think that on the one hand, if you were to compare the Trump administration's position on immigration with just about any administration's position on immigration, you would have to say that President-elect Biden will do better. It was just,
that's a low bar.
low bar. But I mean, I want to start there. But then in particular, IIUSA has taken the time to reach out to President-elect Biden's transition team. We have spoken at length with folks that are close to the president-elect, in particular, Chris Coons, the senator from Delaware, to educate them about EB-5. And in many instances, the reception has been so good, the education could quickly stop. We know about it. We understand it's an economic development program. We understand what derivative count is doing to current opportunities we have to invest in the United States. So refreshing to hear. It just allows us to, you know, give this deep sigh of relief. Not that we're going to rest on our laurels, but if you ask me if I think the new administration will be a benefit to EB-5, I do. I think it'll be a benefit to immigration reform writ large. I just think there is a different disposition and a global awareness in the Biden team. So it's good news.
you know, listeners might think that the congressional side hasn't changed all that much. The Senate will probably still remain Republican, and the Democrats will still take over on the House. And a lot of the Democrats will still want to just talk about DACA and those areas. So what difference does it make if Congress is the same?
That's a great question. And I've actually had this debate with some friends of mine recently. And, you know, you could really get into the nuances of things here and some speculation, but our speculation is backed up by conversations we've been having with Republican congressional staff. And that's this, that the White House sets the tone for the lion's share of policy that is pursued in the United States. And during the Trump administration, you had not only a tone of the wall and anti-DACA, et cetera, but you had just a generally belligerent tone that was picked up on and supported by a huge number of Republicans. I think that the Republicans, especially the Republicans in the Senate, were always uncomfortable with that. I think they found it politically expedient to carry President Trump's water on a number of different messages, but I think ultimately they were uncomfortable with how it was taking place. And so when you have a person like Joe Biden come into the White House, a person who has worked with many of the Republicans, including Chuck Grassley, for years as a senator, I think that you're going to see a different tone. And I think you're going to see even Republicans willing to compromise for the sake of getting something done finally. Trust me, I don't think members of the House or the Senate appreciate being do-nothing legislators. They want to get something done. And I think in many regards, it was Trump's bellicose disposition that they felt politically expedient they needed to follow, and that won't be there anymore.
So glad to hear that, Aaron. The other thing that we have discovered is that many of the other countries are looking at the same stimulus that we've been talking about, bringing in the wealthy investors. Even if it's a small amount, every penny counts right now. And I mean, $9 billion a year, it's not that small an amount. But what we have heard is that Canada and other countries are going to open up a program by next year to encourage investors to come over there. What are we hearing about bringing EB-5 into an economic stimulus here?
Not much, to be quite honest with you. I think the first step in the process of bringing EB-5 clearly into focus as an economic development program, frankly, is just to get it reauthorized. When I joined IIUSA a little over 2 years ago now, the priority was the same, and that is to seek a long-term reauthorization. And there were a lot of hurdles in the way, and they've since gone by the wayside. Now we're seeing progress with regards to integrity reform that will be built into a reauthorization. But that reauthorization will offer stability in the marketplace. And so far as understanding EB-5's longevity, it will offer political stability for the purposes of the next conversation. And that's what you're talking about. The next conversation is a lot easier to have on a strong foundation of, look, this program has been successful and we're going to be here, as opposed to this program has been successful and we have to wait to our next reauthorization. And the next conversation is, of course, about that $9 billion. You know, that $9 billion makes certain assumptions, not the least of which is that there will be 10,000 visas available to immigrant investors, which of course requires a change, which of course is something that will take place, or the conversation will take place in a much bigger context beyond reauthorization. It'll take place in the context of U.S. immigration reform, because as much as we like to say that EB-5 is an economic development program, which it is, it's painted with the brush of immigration, because we are talking about the distribution of visas.
Aaron, do you think this will make a difference? Will EB-5 be faster? Will it continue to be subject to all these delays and federal litigation, et cetera?
I think that the Biden administration will have a lot to say about that, because I think what you're talking about now are the processing times and the delays and the bottlenecks that we see out of the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Service, the administration charged with the processing of these visa applications and a number of other protocols. It is beyond me to understand the opaqueness of that agency or the pace at which it does its job. I would have to think that some of that is reflective of the current Trump administration's position overall towards immigration. Maybe some of it just has to do with management style, but a Biden administration, I am confident, will take a very strong look at how things are done at USCIS with the understanding that the better they do it, the more income we have to distribute to create and save jobs. And that's really the name of the game. It won't be a legislative fix.
We may need congressional help, Aaron, if we are going to try and see if EB-5 could push troubled businesses, because the current regulations don't really allow EB-5 money to come in and work with troubled businesses unless a business has been showing trouble for 2 years and not necessarily during just this COVID period.
Yeah, that's true. You're absolutely correct, Mona. The regulations do require that. Furthermore, the regulations make it difficult to tabulate jobs created when an investor invests in a distressed or troubled business. And you're right. Although those requirements and that confusion is in regulation, we certainly can revisit that in legislation with the same argument that we're making. Jobs. Jobs. This is about jobs. This is about creating and saving jobs. You want to do more of that? This is a tweak that we can make, and you couldn't do it at a more appropriate time. We can do that legislatively, probably in the context of larger immigration reform, and it's perfectly within the Biden administration's ability to do so, either through a regulatory change or even executive order.
Aaron Grau, again, thank you so much for joining us on EB-5 Investment Voice and giving us your feelings and predictions from the unique perspective you have there at IIUSA.
I love talking with you guys any day, anytime, whenever you need me. Just give me.
And now we're going to talk to Sam Udani of ILW.com, who has been writing a lot since the election. Now is his chance to put a voice to those words. Sam, welcome back again to EB-5 Investment Voice.
Wonderful to have you back.
Delighted to be here.
Great. We would like to hear your thoughts. I know you have written quite a lot about the election. So yeah. our audience are thinking about how this really affects EB-5 and immigration. We do know that Joe Biden is somebody who is for immigration. So the first thing is that, as he's already said, as soon as he comes into office, he will get rid of the travel bans.
So let's talk about what are the implications of Biden's victory and this election on immigration and EB-5 in particular. The fact of the matter is that even in ordinary administrations, the president has a significant amount of influence and actually decision-making power over immigration matters. In this particular administration that we are still living under, the Trump administration, that has been even more pronounced. So a lot of the immigration actions of the Trump presidency have been done through executive orders and other matters of orders given by the office of the president or by one of his appointees. Now, in other words, not by regulation and certainly not by legislation. And what that means is that that which can be done by the pen can be also undone by the pen. So there is a whole slew of executive orders and other executive branch actions which can be undone extremely rapidly by Mr. Biden, should he want to. I have definitive information from people who are advising the Biden campaign on immigration matters that an entire briefing book has been prepared and was prepared some time ago on all the various executive orders that President Biden can issue.
But Sam, being very practical, it's going to take many, many months. There were hundreds and hundreds of orders sent out by President Trump.
No, not in immigration. The briefing book, actually, they were directed by the campaign to present the data in what can Mr. Biden accomplish in the first 100 days, what can he accomplish in the first year, and what can he accomplish in his first term. And it turned out that because these executive orders, you're right, there's a very large number of them, but they're pretty easy to undo and pretty easy for him to sign. He's not going to sprain his fingers signing those executive orders. So, the travel ban and various other high profile immigration issues, such as the, you know, what's happening on the border, what's happening on refugees, the detention, asylum,
removal,
many of those, DACA, of course, absolutely. Those things will happen in extremely short order in the first month of the Biden presidency, and some of them in the first week of the Biden presidency. So as far as EB-5 is concerned, there is going to be some impact off the various bans. I mean, there have been some countries from which everything has come to a halt, including EB-5. which can now recommence in terms of investments. But the bigger message that's going to be going out to the federal executive branch, especially to USCIS, is that, you know, we're not here to simply be an enforcement agency or an enforcement type mentality against immigrants. So USCIS is going to be reminded of its benefits agenda and its benefits mission. And I suspect USCIS processing times might improve. Now, broadly speaking, and even stepping away from immigration, the Trump administration espoused a view which has been always around in American politics in the last century, but it's always been kind of muted in a minority view, which is that of isolationism. But that's never been the majority view. The majority view for the last 100 years has been to engage the world, and the Biden presidency can be expected very quickly, very, very quickly, the Department of State will reopen to the rest of the world and re-engage the rest of the world.
Sam, do you see that we are going to see a faster opening of the consulates? Because at the moment, they are closed because of COVID, not really because of anything that Mr. Trump has done.
No question that there will be faster reopening of consulates. Remember, I mean, we've had consulates working in extremely hazardous situations. COVID is, by comparison, a relatively minor hazard and a relatively easy to protect our consular staff against. So not only will consulates open, but I would suspect that visa processing in particular will be prioritized, because opening up and re-engaging to the rest of the world, one of the elements of it is regular visa processing, or at least some semblance thereof. So I expect there to be considerably more activity within the first quarter, within the first 100 days of the Biden administration, in terms of EB-5 cases getting adjudicated in consulates overseas.
Great. Well, so what do you see as the impact of the election on EB-5 specifically?
There are places where most people don't think about this, but there is going to be activity and which affects EB-5 significantly. Historically, and I'm referring to the SEC, historically, Republican administrations have gone easier on SEC enforcement than Democratic administrations. And I'm speaking very broadly and generally. There have been a lot of exceptions, but that's the general rule which I just said.
Right.
And therefore, we can expect, as a general matter, SEC enforcement to pick up the pace dramatically and pretty quickly after Mr. Biden assumes office. And as part of that, the SEC's protection for immigrant investors will be one of the elements in SEC enforcement. And over the last year or so, there have been a lot of issuers and finders operating in the gray area. And they're going to find, almost all of them, they're going to find themselves under scrutiny. They're going to find themselves under at the receiving end of SEC subpoenas for information, some of which may be followed by various measures that the SEC will institute to enforce the securities law. So I expect that that will also be something that will, so it's not all good, you know, all good and rosy for EB-5 in a Biden administration.
Well, we do hope to see the fact that EB-5 would be utilized as far as an economic stimulus. And that was going to come in despite whoever came in back in, whether it was President Trump or President Biden.
That's a legislative matter. Clearly, the incoming Biden administration, they're staffed by a lot of people who are veterans of the Obama administration. And the biggest mistake Mr. Obama made, according to Obama alumni, the biggest mistake that the Obama administration made was in not going big in the economic recovery package, which was in the immediate aftermath of Obama assuming office. And they're determined not to repeat that.
Right.
So they're looking at solutions in the first 100 days of anywhere from $3 trillion to $6 trillion to more. And these are enormous numbers, and they're going to have a tremendous amount of consequences. And yeah, I mean, EB-5 is certainly being talked about in terms of, as you say, Mona, it's going to be part of the solution. It's a very tiny part, a teeny weeny part.
But every penny counts. If we see an increase in the visa supply, how do you see marketing? You're one person who does go out and does a lot of marketing overseas. Have you noticed any differences right now, just even in the announcement of the Biden administration?
There's two basic issues, right? One is short-term, one is long-term. Yes, I mean, I am aware of at least three specific cases that attorneys had talked to me about where they had put the source of funds on hold because they were worried about what would happen, and there was a lot of uncertainty about this election. And the fact that this uncertainty is now fully resolved will cause, I'm sure, those three cases to move forward, as many other cases like that. But over and above that, the real issue is COVID. right? There's some countries like Taiwan, you know, number five EB5 country, so that's an important EB5 country, where they have not had a single COVID case in over 200 days. But most countries have been severely affected by COVID. And that is what is really the problem, that projects and investors can't meet, can't talk, agents can't meet, can't talk with the investors. And therefore, as COVID recedes, I mean, we had news this morning that Pfizer believes its vaccine is 90% effective. AstraZeneca and Johnson & Johnson's vaccines are also imminent, as are many other vaccines in other countries. So if a vaccine comes about and, you know, we get all our healthcare workers across America vaccinated, then we get the elderly vaccinated, all of that could possibly be achieved in as little as 6 months. Well, that will cause COVID, you know, fatality rates to collapse 95%. And at that point, all of a sudden, our economy will come roaring back, and as will the rest of the world. We are going to certainly share this vaccine with the countries. This is a global problem.
So, Sam, do you see any implications of the fact that now that we have a Biden administration, that Mr. Trump has gone, but actually Mr. Trump's supporters haven't really gone? They are still there.
Well, absolutely. His supporters are very much here. They are Americans and they're here in America and they have very strong views, which is why they voted for Mr. Trump in the first place. I mean, this election had a dramatic, the highest in 125 years in terms of the number of people who turned out to express an opinion at the polls. What does that mean? I mean, these folks, unfortunately, many of them have been hurt. They've lost jobs. Globalization has not been kind to them, and they are angry, and then they want a solution. All I will point out is that all reliable evidence indicates that it is automation, not immigration, that has damaged their jobs. And automation is not only not going away, it is going to gather steam in the coming 10 years. So the 2020s are going to find that this unhappy group of Trump supporters will have more cause to be unhappy. So we have an unresolved political problem where our politicians have not made it clear to a very large chunk of the country that they are between a rock and a hard place.
Well, Sam, you're saying the politicians are stuck between a rock and a hard place, but honestly, what does that mean for EB5 petitioners and all immigrants?
All I'm saying is that immigrants and EB5 immigrants too are being made scapegoat in this conundrum that country is facing. And immigration is not the problem. And therefore, you know, no amount of immigration tweaking is going to be part of the solution in terms of trying to, you know, berate immigrants for what the causes for which lie in the realm of automation and technology and not in immigration or globalization. That's an unresolved issue. I urge people, even in EB5, to consider the wider things that are happening. Immigration is no longer a comma within a comma. It's now a big part of American politics. And the more we confront the issues, the better it will all be.
Sam Udani, as usual, your writing, your voice on this topic is illuminating. Thank you so much for coming back on EB5 Investment Voice.
Delighted to be here. Thank you once again.
And now we welcome to the show the chairman of the Immigration Industry Association based in the United Kingdom, Chris Galway. Chris, welcome to EB5 Investment Voice.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
So you are right now in sunny London?
I think so. I think so. We're in a little bit of a lockdown at the moment, I think, as the world quite rightly knows. But listen, nothing but positive news coming out of the United Kingdom, I think, you know, from yesterday's announcement of a vaccine to, you know, where we're going to from here. It's a bright future.
Bright future indeed, and getting brighter every day. Chris, the Immigration Industry Association is based in the United Kingdom, but it's an international organization, yes?
Yeah. The Immigration Industry Association was a brainchild of myself and also another wonderful lady called Paula McGowan. It was about bringing the industry together from the immigration expat providers in the industry. So not just immigration lawyers, but also relocation specialists, FX banks, you know, all of those wonderful businesses out there who are associated with, you know, changing people's lives and a better and brighter future for people in other countries.
Well, Chris, let me ask you, since I don't want Mona's accent or Rebecca's current location to sway you, how do the British feel about the results of the US election?
I think there's a couple of different moving parts when it comes to the results of the election, because in the background of you, I think you've got to also remember that we're in the midst of Brexit, and what Brexit means to the UK population, I think, is still quite rightly unknown. One of the things that we do know, though, is whilst we're sitting there looking at Brexit, we're looking at the US election and looking at, you know, the results that come out of that and what that means for business, you know, investment, and obviously off the back of that, what happens in immigration. So I think, you know, from my perspective and what I've seen and heard from people, it's a really positive thing that's happening in the United States from this election.
Do you see any impact as far as, you know, things like lifting of Trump's travel bans for immigration out of the UK?
What you're seeing at the moment is the UK is a little bit of a holding place for a business and investor and other visa applicants to the United States. So they've used the UK. Yeah, they've used the UK really as a portal, and the data specifically shows this as well, is that their deep desire is to go to the United States. Obviously, with not as many barriers or boundaries that are put around them for their application process, but you know, this is just a portal. I think you'll find these days, especially in the business and investor stream, of visa classes from around the world, the United States is one of the most highly desired visas in that category. And a lot of business and investor visas, they want the ability to have freedom. So you'll see, you know, this positive impact that's going to appear from this election on the weekend will certainly have a major impact on the outbound in business and investor visa from the United Kingdom, especially during Brexit and especially during the unknown of Brexit at this end of the journey.
Yeah.
Well, I'm sure a lot of our listeners would be very interested to hear that, Chris, but it doesn't really help anyone wanting to bring in investment for the United Kingdom.
Well, it does in a way. If you think about where the United Kingdom is at the moment, in especially obviously through the pandemic and going post-pandemic, the United Kingdom equally needs business and investor visas, but imagine the future of the United Kingdom outside of the EU and with quite a forthright or an impactful free trade agreement with the United States, I think is going to make a wonderful transition to the future for us, especially from the business and investor position. It would make perfect sense for someone to invest now or in the earlier years, in the last 5 years, into the United Kingdom and then transition across to the US. Let's face it, it's, you know, additionally, it's about having citizenship eventually for some people, other people, it's about divesting their business opportunities into, you know, one of the largest economies in the world.
Yeah, Chris, you know, a lot of people are a little worried because Biden is not a big fan of Brexit and he didn't really get on very well with your prime minister. And as well as that, he has roots in Ireland. So whether or not a trade deal with the United Kingdom would be the foremost on his agenda, I'm not sure.
Yeah, look, you're quite right in what you're saying. I mean, in fact, I saw the parties on the TV in Ireland over the weekend when he...
yeah, I did too.
Yeah, Rebecca was just talking about that.
You know, and good on him. But I think he's certainly given early indications that he's a global leader. He's a leader for everybody. From the perspective that I look at it, and certainly in talking to some of our members about this as well, is yes, he is more European Union centric than he is to the British. There's no two ways about that. But the UK is going to have to deal with that in so many ways. But we know things like the global economy is going to, you know, be uplifted in the next few years. But we know specifically, and especially from a lot of fund managers out there making a lot of noise about the US economy and the boom of the US economy over the next 2 years, specifically. UK, I don't think, is going to have much of an option but to get on board.
I totally agree. And of course, we all know that the UK was no fan of Donald Trump. There were protests every time he came over.
Yeah, what can I say? I saw them. It was probably one of the most difficult things to look at in US politics, especially for me on a personal level, is I don't like seeing people separated or put to one side. And so on a personal level, I was happy to see the results of the election on the weekend.
I think many people will echo your voice, Chris. One last question. A lot of people come to London as a hub, especially in our area, who are doing global investment, global immigration, and they find that the London is a great hub for potential investors from the Commonwealth. Do you see that as continuing?
I do see it continuing somewhat, but it will...
It's shifted, right?
It has. It definitely has. And what it's going to come down to, and if you look back at the GFC, it's actually a really good example of what happened or what can happen in the future. The differences are is that the US economy, the fund managers are broadcasting quite widely that there's a two-year boom period coming up post-COVID. And post-COVID's coming pretty soon, let's face it. It's not a forever thing. I think we've got solutions to that. But using, you know, the UK being a hub for potential investors from the Commonwealth, for sure, it is a hub, but as in most hubs, it has a mainstream over to the US. I mean, prior to COVID, we were $1 trillion, I think, worth of co-investment between the United States and the United Kingdom. that just makes sense that you would carry on from that and grow it. So invest in the UK from the Commonwealth for sure, but your bigger plan should always be, where are you going to go? To the land of the free, to the land of opportunity? If I had my choice, I'd be there tomorrow.
Yeah, you have such an optimistic outlook. I love it.
Well, yeah, I think, and it's not that you have to be, it's the realism of a lot of noise that exists in the marketplace at the moment. And there's lots and lots of noise, you know, from the economic markets to the political markets. The reality is that, you know, when people make that choice about moving from one country to another, you know, it's about family, it's about getting return on your investment, both personally and from a business and entrepreneurial perspective for some people. But ultimately, it's about changing your life for the better. If every single person asks themselves, how do we change our lives for the better? Well, then the obvious answer is that the United States must be at the top of the list when it comes to that. The UK certainly has attractions, you know, for a lot of people, but it's not the end of the journey. It just isn't.
Oh, your optimism is contagious. Chris Galway, thank you so much for coming on EB5 Investment Voice.
Oh, thanks very much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Now we're joined by Patrick McCarthy. Patrick is the Immigrant Investor Program Director at Sherbrooke Street Capital, located in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. Patrick, let's start off by getting your feel of what Canadians think of the U.S. election.
Well, are the results out yet? I guess that's my first question. But I think by and large, Canadians are happy with the results. Of course, there's people in both camps, you know, supporters of both candidates, it goes without saying. But I think overall, if you were to poll Canadians, I think most would view a Biden administration as being the best thing for Canada and for Canadians. You know, what happens in the United States has a tremendous impact here in Canada. Our countries share not only the longest undefended border in the world, but we share so much economically, socially, culturally, politically, and we share resources and information as it pertains to national security.
Of course.
And so Canadians, we've been glued to our screens the last few weeks, the last few months, the last 4 years, and very intent on seeing the outcome of this election. I read this morning, actually, that Justin Trudeau was the first international leader to congratulate Joe Biden in person. I know many have by saying
congratulations. I thought it was Boris Johnson who was the first.
I think that was a press release or by Twitter, but actually Prime Minister Trudeau and Biden, they had a phone call yesterday. And I think that really illustrates how important the relationship between the two countries is. It's also worth mentioning, you know, that relationship transcends any one administration. It's bigger than it's bigger than whoever's sitting in the White House or whoever's the Prime Minister. And
oh, I agree.
The last proved that, you know, we continue to have an excellent relationship with the United States and a mutually beneficial one as well. So,
no, definitely. I definitely agree with that because, well, Trump did not get on so well with the Prime Minister Trudeau. That's, we know.
Yeah, personal things aside, but I think at the end of the day, the two accomplished a lot together as well. You know, the free trade agreement in North America was renegotiated. A lot was done in terms of border security. And I think that shows the processes are still in place, regardless of who might be sitting in the seat.
Well, I know that you are starting a new program out in Canada next year. And do you feel that the lifting of Trump's travel bans will have any impact on who goes to the United States and who decides again to choose Canada?
I think Canada generally, we're viewed very favorably in the world. We have been for many years, and I think we continue to be viewed as a great destination, a great place to raise a family, a great place to seek refuge, a great place to seek higher post-secondary education, and certainly a great place to invest and do business. And so Canada itself has all of these pull factors, if you'll allow me to use that expression, the factors that immigrants consider when they're looking for a new home for their families. And obviously, we compete with many other nations, including the United States. We compete for the best and the brightest, the most entrepreneurial. But when one of our competitors adopts measures that restrict their own immigration, whether it's quotas or travel bans or physical barriers, I think those measures make Canada more competitive and they make Canada also seem more attractive.
I agree with that. I totally agree. We were seeing this for the last 2-3 years whenever we traveled, and we did see a lot of people overseas thinking that Canada was a better destination simply because of all of the issues that Trump had raised and the difficulties in becoming an immigrant. But are you seeing an increase in immigration in or out of Canada?
Definitely. No question that the trend lines are all pointing up as it relates to immigration. To give a little bit of context, when 5 years ago, we were admitting somewhere around 250,000 to 270,000 immigrants per year. That's not including international students or temporary workers.
Interesting.
It maybe doesn't seem like 250,000 people, it's maybe a small town in the United States, but it's very significant when you consider it as a percentage of our population. We're only about 35 million people. So that's, you know, close to 1%. So that was 5 years ago. But when our current government was elected, those immigration targets were raised. 2 years ago, I think we celebrated the introduction of a three-year immigration plan that would see us welcoming about 1 million people over 3 years. So that was more or less a 30% increase. And even just this past March, before, pre-COVID, the immigration minister, when they updated those targets, I think the admission targets for 2020 to 2022 were going to be somewhere between 1 million to 1.1 million. Just 2 weeks ago, actually, Minister Mendocino updated those targets. And over the next 3 years, we're now targeting to admit almost 1.25 million people over those 3 years. That's a 20% increase just to compare it to what was targeted in March.
That's
huge. And when you go back, when you compare it to 2015, you're talking now about an increase of 60 to 70%.
Wow, that's a drastic immigration shift due to a political change.
It's huge. And we're seeing it across the board. We're talking about increases in skilled migration. We're talking about increases in family reunification. We're talking about increases in refugees and asylum seekers, for sure. And obviously also business immigrants, individuals are going to make investments here in Canada. And that last segment, the business people, the investors, the high net worth families, I think we're in a tremendous position to leverage our brand in Canada to attract these people, to attract these families as part of our post-pandemic recovery.
Well, other than leveraging the Canadian brand, what programs do you have in place to bring people in?
The immigration program's already in place. The most popular one is probably the Quebec Immigrant Investor Program. It's Canada's only passive investment immigration program. But there's also the Startup Visa program geared towards younger entrepreneurs with innovative and high-tech ideas, and more than a dozen entrepreneurial programs across the country. So I really feel like we're in a good position moving forward to capture a good number of these business and investor migrants.
Mm. And what are you seeing as the latest hubs for potential investors? Because that has shifted somewhat over the last 2-3 years, especially since Brexit.
We're seeing a lot of interest. I mean, obviously, China continues to be a big source country. It's a lot of interest from business people in China, India, for sure. The Middle East, Saudi Arabia, in the Gulf area, South America, of course. But, we're also seeing increases from Europe. We're seeing increases from the UK as well. And I have to say, we're seeing increases from the United States as well. We're getting a lot more phone calls.
So I guess all those jokes on social media in 2016 that they're moving to Canada weren't jokes.
Well, thank you, Patrick. McCarthy, thank you so much for coming on EB5 Investment Voice.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Yes, thank you, Patrick McCarthy. And thank you to everyone else we've heard from on this special episode of EB5 Investment Voice. And special thanks to you, dear listener. I know it's been a couple weeks since you've heard from us, and a lot has been happening in the United States, but maybe not as much as we would expect after election. We took this time to compile multiple viewpoints on the outlook of EB5 and present it to you in a concise manner. We hope you enjoyed it, and we'll catch you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.
Thank you for being with us today on EB5 Investment Voice. The topics presented in this podcast is informational in nature and is not to be taken as specific legal advice. If you have questions on the topics presented in this episode or other investment immigration needs, please contact Mona Shaw & Associates. Mona and her attorney staff can be reached at mshawlaw.com. That's mshahlaw.com. Make sure you don't miss our next episode focusing on a different aspect of the EB5 program by subscribing to the podcast. While you're at it, leave us a rating on iTunes. If you really found this episode valuable, share it with someone else that could benefit from this information. Until then, I'll see you on the next episode of EB5 Investment Voice.